Today's message is about the table. The table. And you're all sitting at a table. And Jesus invites us to His table. Now we're going to take communion here in a little bit. And we're going to talk about what the power of the table is. These tables have amazing powers that you probably have never recognized in a table before. Okay, it's not a seance. Okay, it's not like that. It's but there's power in the gathering around the table. Okay, and I want you to experience some of that. So that's why we sat around tables. So right now, what I'd like you to do is let's pretend like I gave you $300,000. Okay, you getting excited? This is yes. I'll pretend, but we can pretend to be excited too. And I gave you $300,000, as much as you would need to buy one of four vehicles. Okay, you could get a high-powered sports car, like a Lamborghini, Maserati, or whatever they got. Okay, the sports car that would outrun anybody on the Autobahn. Or you could get an all-terrain vehicle, where if you want to turn left, you can turn left. Doesn't matter if there's a left turn there or not. You just go. Okay, and it could be as big and souped up as you want it to be. Or like an SUV kind of thing. Or you could get a luxury car with all the bells and whistles and comforts. Okay, the thing that floats like a boat down the road. Okay, or you can get an RV family type vehicle. You get the whole group in there plus a few cousins. Travel the world, travel the country anyway. And okay, you can get one of those four kinds. We got the high performance. You've got the all-terrain, you've got the luxury, and you've got the family truckster or RV, you know, the special thing. Okay, so which one would you buy? Money is not an object, and why? That's the question, the two questions. So I want you to share it with your table. Okay, go around your table and have everybody share which one and why. Ready, go. Guys, get around? Okay. All right. So you just had a little bit of a table experience. Because all I had to do was ask you what kind of car would you drive and why. And as soon as you start getting into why, you start revealing a little bit about yourself. I want to talk to you about the table. Job 36 said, God is wooing you from the jaws of distress to a spacious place free from restriction to the comfort of your table laden with choice food. Think about that. And that verse is so loaded with what a table means. It's a place free from restriction. It's away from the jaws of distress. It's a place that brings comfort. It's a place that brings encouragement. The comfort of your table laden with choice food. It brings nourishment. It brings enjoyment. It brings fulfillment. The table is a powerful, powerful place. Psalm 23:5. We're familiar perhaps with Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Well, verse 5 says, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. And so even in the presence of my enemies, I can have a table, a sense of encouragement, fulfillment, comfort, provision. Or my enemies are at the table and we can talk peace, like a negotiation table or like a peace talks table. Okay? Psalm 78 says, they spoke against God. They said, can God really spread a table in the wilderness? Saying that even in the wilderness of our life, a table can be spread before us. And God can provide for us. Psalm 78, or Psalm 128 says, your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your home, and your children will be like olive shoots around your table. You know, when we get into this age of being grandparents, I think, you start thinking about this kind of thing more. We're going to be celebrating a wedding here pretty soon of our middle son. It'll be the last one to get married. And it'll be in November. We'll be gone a couple of weeks, and it's in Indianapolis. Well, Caleb is the only one of our family that lives in Indianapolis. And so we've got to get family from Rapid City, from Mitchell, from Michigan, all to converge down in Indianapolis. But Pat's statement, she said to me twice this week, is, I want everybody there. Can you relate to that? I want everybody there. And it's just like when we have dinner, you know, it's like we want the family there. We're going to make dinner and have a meal time together, even if this is once a week or once a month. It's like we want everybody there. We want those olive shoots all around the table, because there's something about that that makes me feel full, that nourishes my heart, that nourishes my soul. And so the table in the Bible is hugely significant. In Jeremiah 52, king of Judah, Jehoiakim, had been captured by Babylon and put into prison. And then a new king of Babylon came, released him from prison, gave him back his royal robes, and invited him to eat at his table. And so every day he would eat at the king's table. In the Bible, if you were invited to somebody's table, if you were eating at a table, that means you were welcomed in that home by the host. You were invited there, you were wanted there, you were welcomed there, you were accepted there. That's what the table signifies. The table signifies that there's a place for you. We want you here. I'm accepting you. I love you. Or we have kinship. We have camaraderie. There's friendship. The Bible, like today in the Bible, tables were used for gathering around to share a meal. And gathering around a table and sharing a meal meant that you were welcome to the table. You're welcome to the gathering. The host of the table has accepted you, and you're welcome to his table. And so there's acceptance and friendship and fellowship and affinity and kinship and camaraderie. But there's also nourishment. Usually a table involves food. And so there's nourishment of the body, but there's also nourishment of the soul, nourishment of the spirit. Okay? And you come away from the table feeling full in more ways than one, when you've really enjoyed fellowship around that table. There's refocusing. Sometimes we kind of get scattered out in our lives, and then when we come back into the family or come back into our loved ones or our friends, our fellow believers, and we come around the table and we enjoy some time there, it reminds us of who we are and our value and the fact that, yes, I've got a place. And I have a sense of belonging, and I have a purpose. And so it refocuses me, it energizes me, it strengthens me, and it's a place of safety. And I would propose, as we get into this new series about exploring discipleship, following Christ, what is all that about, that every believer needs a Christian table. You need a Christian table. You need a table to come to, and it may be a living room with no table, but you need, so to speak, table to come to in order for you to grow as a believer. If we're not part of a table, I doubt that we really grow that much. You can grow some. You do your devotions, come to worship, gather together. But until you get into relationships that go below the surface of, hey, how you doing? And this is my name. And how is your week? Until we get into relationships that are ongoing and more like life sharing as opposed to lobby greeting, until we get into those relationships, our growth is stunted. We don't grow any deeper. And so it's in the context of the table where deeper growth happens, and where health is ministered to us. The table is a healing place. It's a healing place. And so it brings health to our spirits and to our souls and makes us alive and thrive. But that really only comes in the context of community, of sharing life with one another, where somebody really knows me well now, and they still love me and accept me. They can speak into my life. They can share concerns, but they can also speak into my life and remind me of my value or my gifts, or my strengths. Every believer needs a table. I don't know how people survive in the Christian life all by themselves, and I think they really don't. They fall away. But when somebody comes and they become part of a community that goes beyond that weekend service and the handshakes in the hallway, when they become part of a community and they're sharing life together, it gives their faith a stickiness. They stick to it. And a thriving. And so we all need a table. In Christian community, the table serves a lot of functions. In fact, there's all kinds of different tables. Okay? One would be the kitchen table. What happens at the kitchen table? Food, eating, okay? Talking about the day, catching up. Yeah, and play games. The other night we were playing games with some other folks, and it was fun. And I've been bound by my wife to inform you that the women creamed the men in the game, and I didn't mention that the last two times I gave this sermon, and that was pointed out to me. So now there's going to be a grudge match. And so we'll come back. But you know, even, you know, it was just kind of being together, you know. And so the kitchen table provides a place of not only nourishment, but of also relational connection. A lot of times there's a set, you know, meal time associated with it. And so there's a bit of a consistency and kind of an expectation. Let's be there. Okay, let's be at the table. Meals being served. Another kind of, when you're sharing life in Christian community with other believers at your Christian table, sometimes it's a kitchen table, sometimes it's a conference table. And what do you do at a conference? When you have a conference with somebody, you have a meeting, what's happening there? You know, you're making a plan, you're strategizing perhaps, you're deciding on direction. And so sometimes when you're living in community, your group, your community will be a conference table where you're planning and strategizing. What are we going to be as a group? Where are we going to go? What's our next steps? What's the plan? How are we going to impact others? You know, sometimes in your family, you have a conference table. It's like, okay, we're going to plan our vacation, or we're going to rearrange the schedule or whatever. Sometimes it's a negotiating table. And that's a time where you come together and you negotiate the relationship in the family or in the group. It's like, what are the boundaries? What are the rules? What I see a lot of times in Christian community is it never goes as deep. What I see is that if we ever have to get to a place where we need to renegotiate the relationship in any way and we need to work something out, we don't work it out. We put it under the rug until we can't tolerate it anymore, and then we leave. And we go find a different group. That's what we normally do. We don't deal with things. And so if I get into a group and we start going deeper and some of my faults start to show and somebody kind of calls me on it, you know, maybe in a very loving way, and I don't like that, rather than kind of negotiating through, I just run away. This is what I see. And it's like that is stunted growth. We stay spiritual children if we can't get through that. So kitchen, conference, another kind of table is the coffee table. You can find these at Starbucks, you know, and sometimes in a house. But the coffee table is very casual. It's just very relaxed. It's just chit-chat. And so we gather around the coffee table sometimes. It just feels good to just kind of, it's kind of like catching up and just chit-chat. There's no expectations, really. It's like, well, got to go. Okay, bye. Can you meet for coffee? Not today. How about tomorrow? Okay, tomorrow. Very relaxed, low expectations. And a lot of times I see small groups that are just coffee tables. You know, they get together and they just kind of chit-chat. And it doesn't go any farther than that. And then if that's all it ever is, it's not serving a great purpose. It's serving some purpose, though. But sometimes we just need a coffee table. Sometimes, oftentimes, almost always, at least part of our community sharing is a seminar. Right now you're at a table and you're kind of at a seminar. It's like you're here and you're learning something, or we're thinking about something, looking at something a new way. And a lot of small groups, they never get beyond that. This is all they are. And if I came to a small group and I didn't learn something new, then I wasted my time. If I didn't learn something new or look at something old a new way or have a different idea or thought or learn a skill, then I wasted my time. And it's got to be go beyond seminar. But a lot of times it is seminar. We're learning something. We're growing. We want to gain new information. But it can't just be that. And then sometimes, it's this one. It's an operating table. I don't see very many groups ever get this far, actually. That's a hard one. I've not been in very many groups that have gotten as far as being an operating table where somebody becomes face-to-face with their heart condition and they realize that God's doing some surgery on it. And the group kind of becomes the surgery room techs and nurses and assistants to what God's doing in somebody's heart. Now, sometimes I have seen where somebody's had some internal bleeding and it's just hemorrhaging, and the group has been able to help stop the bleeding. They've been able to minister to them in that way and bring healing. But a lot of times, if there's an infection that needs to be gotten rid of, if there's a cancer that needs to be cut out, there's a tumor, there's a behavior, there's a habit, there's some kind of thing that's holding them back in life, a group can have, when you go deep and you have these deeper relationships, a group can function in the way of helping that person lovingly face that and explore it and start to allow God to cut it out and take it out and do some real heart surgery. This is why the table is so important for spiritual growth and for walking the walk with Jesus. Jesus did much of his ministry at tables. If you go and look through the New Testament, the Gospel, note how many times it says that Jesus reclined at a table. And they use recline because those Roman tables were low, and that was kind of the habit or the practice. They had these low tables with cushions coming out from them, kind of a U shape, and the servants would come into the middle of the U and put the food in front of you, and you'd be kind of leaning on one elbow and you'd be eating like this with your head at the table. And that's why in the Bible, where it says that the disciple whom Jesus loved, John, had leaned back and laid his head on Jesus' breast. Well, he was laying right behind him. You know, and all he had to do was just kind of lean back this way. And so when you see Da Vinci's painting of the Last Supper, they're sitting upright at tables, that's like centuries later. But the Bible says they would recline. And many, many times, Jesus was invited to at least two different Pharisees' homes. And he went there, and he reclined at their table, and he ate with them. Okay, he shared life with these people. He was invited to the tax Nicodemus's home. In fact, he invited himself to Nicodemus's home. Remember that? Hey, I'm coming to your house. So, okay. You know, I guess Jesus can do that. And it was a time, it was a, in that sharing of life of Jesus coming to the table at Nicodemus's home, it was a life-changing moment for Nicodemus. He completely turned his life around. And that's what happens at the table. Jesus was invited to the leper's table. He had healed a leper, and he had gone to his home. That's a huge thing. Really? You're going to go to a leper's home? Going to go inside? sit at his table, recline there. And he did that. And Jesus invites us to his table. He did so much of his ministry around the table because that's where the healing happens. And that's where people share life, face life, and grow in life. Grow in their walk with Christ in their real life. At the table. I'd love to see everybody have a table that they go to every week. They've got something. They've got a group. They've got a Christian gathering. And they do these things. They share together. They strategize and negotiate. They relax and enjoy. They learn. And they operate sometimes. I guess we were at Williston and they were at the small group leaders training and they laid out these different tables for us and they added one. It was the changing table. Well, as you're going to get familiar with the changing table. You know? And it's like sometimes you come to group and you just need to have a little change go on there. And so, kind of a mess to clean up sometimes. To grow as a disciple, we need to be part of a table of believers where we can be welcomed and we can be accepted and we can be nourished and strengthened and help find direction and work out relationships and learn some new things and sometimes receive surgery. So to grow as a disciple, you need to be spiritually healthy, and spiritual health comes from the table. But also, to grow as a disciple, you need to be engaged in giving out what you also receive at the table. In other words, you need to be welcoming and accepting to others and nourishing others and helping to guide and giving input in learning experiences and assisting at the operating table, meeting needs. That helps us grow. Otherwise, if we're always just receivers, that helps us maybe get to a place of healing, but not grow. And we're going to close our service with communion here in a minute. It's Jesus' very last table experience on earth. And he chose to have this last table experience before his crucifixion with his disciples. I'm going to meet with my best, my closest friends here for his Last Supper. Let's look at verse 7, chapter 22. Then came the day of unleavened bread on which the Passover lamb had to be sacrificed. Jesus sent Peter and John, saying, "Go and make preparations for us to eat the Passover." "Where do you want us to prepare for it?" they asked. He asked, "As you enter the city, a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him to the house that he enters and say to the owner of the house, 'The teacher asks, where is the guest room where I may eat the Passover with my disciples?' He will show you a large room upstairs, all furnished. Make preparations there." They left and found things just as Jesus had told them, so they prepared the Passover. When the hour came, Jesus and his apostles reclined at the table. There we are, at the table. And he said to them, "I have eagerly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. For I tell you, I will not eat it again until it finds fulfillment in the kingdom of God." Talking about the kingdom of God. After taking the cup, he gave thanks and said, "Take this and divide it among you, for I tell you, I will not drink again from the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God comes." Second mention. And he took bread, gave thanks, and broke it, and gave it to them, saying, "This is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, after the supper, he took the cup, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is poured out for you." He said, "But the hand of him who is going to betray me is with mine on the table." This is interesting. Jesus' last table experience was his last supper, his last communion with his closest friends, his disciples. And it was a precursor or an announcement of the future table in the kingdom. but it was also his table of betrayal. For Jesus, his last table experience was the table of betrayal, where his hand was on the same table that his betrayer's hand was on. He goes on. He says, "The Son of Man will go as it has been decreed, but woe to that man who betrays him." They began to question among themselves which of them it might be who would do this. A dispute also rose among them as to which of them was considered to be greatest. All of a sudden they're in the negotiation table, figuring out the relationship. Jesus said to them, "The kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who exercise authority over them call themselves benefactors, but you're not to be like that. Instead, the greatest among you should be like the youngest, and the one who rules like the one who serves. For who's greater, the one who's at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who's at the table? But I am among you as one who serves. You are those who have stood by me in my trials, and I confer on you a kingdom." There's another mention of the kingdom. "Just as my Father conferred one on me, so that you may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom and sit on thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel." Jesus wants so much for us to be at his table and to be at the table together with one another. He commands us. He says, come together to the table. Do this in remembrance of me. And I think he was thinking beyond doing a little ceremonial ritual. I think he was saying, beyond that, I want you to share life together. Come to the table often, like I taught you and like I practiced, like I modeled before you, because that's the healing place. That's the growing place. That's the sharing life place together. Do this in remembrance of me and remembering my sacrifice that brings you together, but also remembering that one day you're going to be sitting at a table with no want, with no scarcity, with plenty. You're going to be sitting at a table of royalty. You're going to be sitting on thrones at this table. One day, you're going to be at my table. And so do this in remembrance of what I've done, and do this in remembrance of what I'm going to do.